Okay.
He's going to start you. Once he starts, a little
I'm
bit
starting now. Okay. So we are holding on Nunvav Ahmed Bey's, the second line of the widest lines. So eight lines from the bottom. We were learning before about various people in Jewish history where it seems from Psukim that they did serious averus, and we're saying that when we analyze it, we find that at least according to one way of looking at it, it wasn't necessarily so serious. We talked about Reuben, we talked about the sons of Eli, the sons of Shmuel, David, Shlomo, and now we're up to the last one. Omer of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Omer of Denison. Kola Omer Yeshiyahu Chata Eina Elatoya. Anybody who says that Yeshiyahu sinned is making a mistake. Now, what's Yeshiyahu? We know he was one of the last kings of Yehuda. He was a tzaddik. He destroyed all the Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael. He got the people to observe Pesach in a way that they hadn't observed it in a long time, etc. The reason why we would think that he did Averis is because the Pasuk describes him as the Gemara is going to quote a Pasuk that he did Shuv. You have at the end of the Haftorah, it's in the Haftorah of the second day of Pesach. We say a Pasuk over there that he did Shuvah. So did Shuvah would seem to imply that when he was younger, he worshipped Rabbi Dezara, and then when he got older, he did Shuvah from it. So Rabbi Shmuel Menachmeni wants us to know that that's a mistake. Shenem, as the Pasuk says, Vayasa Yosef Eini Hashem, he did what was right in the eyes of Hashem, Vayelech B'chol Derech David Omid. Yoshiyahu. The Pasuk says he went in all the ways of his father David. So therefore, that means that throughout his life, he did the right thing. So not that he was first a Rasha and then he did Shuvah, but rather that to begin with, he was a Tzaddik. So what do we mean when the Pasuk describes him at the end? Again, it's the last Pasuk of that third of the second day of Pesach, that it says there was no king like him who returned to Hashem with all of his heart, etc. So he's not a Baal Shuvah. He was a tzaddik the whole time. So what do we mean? He did Shuvah. Rather, what it means is Shekol Dayan should done the Ben Shmona and Shmona Esrei. It means all the judgments that he had done from when he was 8 years old, which is when he became king, until 18, Hechziron Lahen. He returned the money to the people that he had taken away from. Now what we mean by 18, there's two possibilities. We know in the Pesukim that when in Yoshiyahu's 18th year is when they did the renovation of the Beit Mikdash, and that's when they discovered the famous Sefer Torah over there, which caused Yoshiyahu to start a whole massive Shuvah revolution in the country. So now again, he had become king at 8 years old. Now it's 18 years later. He's 26. He took the view that now that he's learning the Torah properly for the first time, Torah Shabbat, Torah Shabbat, so he realizes there may very well be things where I decided a case a certain way. People would come to the king for justice when their local basin can't deal with a case or whatever, and he would be judging the case. And he's saying to himself now, maybe I judged it wrongly. Maybe I didn't know what the halacha was because I wasn't learning Torah properly. And therefore, so now I have to return to the person that I decided is wrong, that I have to return him the money. Now, it is true, on the face of it, that's what we mean over here, the 18th year of his reign. However, there are actually poskim who learned based on our Gemara over here, Ad Shmona Esrei, that it actually means until he was 18 years old. Because, and you have the poskim mention a concept that L'Hatchila, until a person is 18 years old, he's not worthy to be a Dayan. Because, as we're saying over here in the Gemara, that before 18, he may not have known necessarily what he's doing. It's also brought actually in Shulchan Aruch on the basis of something from Elder Dadoni from the times of the Goyim that a person under 18 years old shouldn't be a Shoychet either. So as far as Shchita, they say the Hatchila, a person shouldn't be a Shoychet up to the age of 18, but for the Diabed, if he Shechted below the age of 18, then we should accept that. As far as this matter of being a Dayan, it brings in Shulchan Aruch that a person under 18 should not be serving as a Dayan. Yesh Oimim, it says in Shulchan Aruch, that only when he's 18 and older is he kosher, and Yesh Oimim, that from 13 years old and older. Okay. Anyway. anyway, so that's the opinion that says 18 is based on another understanding of Al-Gemara. That doesn't mean the 18th year of his reign, but rather it means when he was 18 years old. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Shema Toma, so you're going to say, not on Mizev and not on Azev. Okay, so how does he undo it? Mesama, what he's doing is, for example, so he had decided Reuben and Shimon had come to him with a case. He had decided the case in favor of Reuben. Now he's saying, maybe I made a mistake, and it was actually supposed to be Shimon. Okay, so you're going to take the view that probably what he did is he called Shimon in and said, you have to return the money to Reuben. Nope, that's not what he did. Talmud Loima, therefore the pasuk says that he returned to Hashem b'chol ma'odoy, with all of his strength. And we know, just like in Kriyas Meshachamita, b'chol ma'odecha, one meaning of it is b'chol ma'moincha, with all of your money. In the same way, it means of a year, shenatam lahem b'shaloi, means he gave them out of his own money. So in our case over here, he would allow Shimon to keep what he had won, because maybe after all, the halacha was indeed that Shimon is right. But just to be on the safe side, in case after all, Reuben was right, he would also give the money to Reuben. So that way, neither one of them is losing out. So that's what it means. So Shmuel Ben Achmeni is saying that's what it means, that he returned to Hashem. Not that before that he had been worshipping Avodah Zarah or being unjust or doing other Avodas, but rather that up until now he wasn't sure whether he had judged correctly, and now he's taking care of that.
What happens if he was Matami something by mistake? How is he going to make up for it?
Because, well, first of all, I mean, then he could reimburse the person. But anyway, when we're not talking about judging in cases of Isser and Heter. Cases of Isser and Heter, you go to a Beis Din. When the cases that a king has the right to judge are cases involving Dinim Mominus. You have, for example, let's say, we know with Dinim Mominus, you need Adin. You need, let's say, for example, you know, if you're claiming, let's say, you know, Reuben's ox gored my ox or whatever, we know that in order for Beis Din to be able to judge the case, it has to be that you have Adin. And as the Rambam points out, even though, I mean, where are you going to find oxen? You're going to find them, you know, there are only Avodim around, there are only cowboys around or whatever. You're not necessarily going to find kosher to aid him. Nevertheless, that's the halacha. You have to have a kosher to aid, and if not, then you don't have a case. So if you have something like that, where Reuben, let's say, claims that Shimon's ox gored mine, and he'd go to his local Beis Din, and the Beis Din would tell him, do you have Adim? And the guy would say, no, the only one that was around was my Eved. Then the Beis Din would tell him, I'm sorry, Mr. Reuben, there's nothing we can do for you. At that point, Reuben has the ability to go to the king and appeal to him, and the king can judge it using the power of the kingship. Where there, he doesn't require Adim. There he can decide it based on his own understanding of what went on over here, like the case of Shlomo HaMelech with two women or whatever, that sort of thing. So that's the point, in other words, that Yoshiyahu was taking the view that after all, maybe all this time I made a mistake, because after all, even so, I mean, the king still has to know the relevant halacha. He still has to know when Reuben is chayev and when he's potter or whatever, and he's saying, I may not have known those details. So therefore, so now he wants to compensate them for that.
Was David Amalek special that he was Matar Isha Labaila by himself?
Yeah, because there he wasn't doing it in his capacity as a king. There he's doing it in his capacity as a Talmud Chacham. He was also a distinguished Talmud Chacham. So therefore, he's able to judge things based on that. But that's not part of his job as a king. That's part of his job as one of the leading Talmud Chachamim among the people. Whereas Yeshayahu, it wasn't necessarily like that.
Can he decide in matters of governmental affairs?
Yeah, that would be another example, yeah.
There was no separation of powers?
Not really, no. I mean, you have separation of powers in the sense that the king doesn't have the ability to decide things. That's what I'm saying. The king doesn't have the ability, let's say, to decide things as far as like, we should have this new rule when it comes to bringing the korbanos, let's say, or whatever. That's not it. That's not his department. That's the Sanhedrin's department is to decide such things. But yeah, but no. And in terms of within government itself, I don't know if there was such a thing as separation of powers as we're familiar with. All right, let's go on. We have a lot to cover. Now this statement that we're saying that Yeshayahu did not actually do anything wrong, and it's just that he's doing this in case he did something wrong, that disagrees with Rav. The Amar Rav, because Rav actually said, "Ein lecha gadol b'balei tshuva yotzei Yeshayahu b'dorei." There's actually no greater bal tshuva than Yeshayahu in his generation, which means that Rav is saying that another Yeshayahu did grow up worshiping Avodah Zarah and doing other things or whatever. Okay, I mean, it wasn't his fault. You know, he grew up, his own father Amon and his grandfather Menashe, before he did Tshuva, were also major Avodah Zarah, and he grew up in a court where they had that kind of thing. So it wasn't his fault. But the fact is that that Rav says that nevertheless, that so he was. He became a Baal Tshuva. He eventually he changed that and became a Baal Tshuva from doing Avodah Zarah. And Rav says, "V'echad b'deirenu," as well as there's one great Baal Tshuva in our generation. Umanu, and who is that? Abba, Avur Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba. It's Abba, the father of Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba. So Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba is an Amora mentioned in a lot of places in Shas. So Rav wants us to know that his father, Rav Abba, was a tremendous Baal Tshuva. Amilo, another version is Acha Achur de Abba Brei de Rav Yirmiyah Avur de Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba. Another version is that it wasn't Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba's father named Abba, but rather his uncle named Acha. The Omer Ma'ar is, in fact, we learn, Abba v'Acha Achi Habu, these Abba and Acha were brothers, and therefore, so according to the second version, it wasn't Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba's brother, his father, rather, who was the Baal Tshuva, but rather his uncle, his father's brother. Omer Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef said, you should know, those aren't the only two great Baal Tshuva in history. V'oid Echad b'deirenu, there's one more in our generation, says Rav Yosef, who's also a tremendous example of a Baal Tshuva. Umanu, so who is that? The answer is Ukvan bar Nechemya Reish Galusa. His name was Ukvan bar Nechemya. He was a Reish Galusa in that time. And V'hainu Nosan de Tzitzisa. He was also called Nosan of the Tzitzisa. Tzitzisa means, Rashi says, Nitzutzin de Nura, means sparks of fire. Because, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, that a Malach stretched out his hand, so to speak, to accept his Tshuva. The Gemara mentions him in Sanhedrin as well, and Rashi gives over there an explanation as follows. What was the story with this Ukvan bar Nechemya? He had a Nissim going off the Bunzin on the side over here. Gilin Ashaf actually refers there, also Mathuris Ashaf. What happened was this Ukvan bar Nechemya had a strong desire for a particular woman who was an Eshet Ish. What happened was now, so he being a Reish Galusa, he had the ability to do something about it. And in particular, there came a point where this woman needed to borrow money from him. So now he could have taken advantage of that. He had the ability to go and to take advantage of the situation and to force her. She was so desperate for the loan, or that she couldn't pay it back or whatever, she was willing to, you know what, you want to do whatever with me, then go ahead. He controlled his Yetzahara and didn't. Which is, and I'm right, that's a tremendous level of tshuva when a person is in the exact same situation where they're perfectly capable of doing the Avera, and they have the ability, and they have the strength, and whatever, and they don't. That's a tremendous level of a Baal Tshuva. So that's what we're saying. This Ukva Bar Nechemya was on that level. He actually managed to control the Yetzirah and not take up this offer that this woman was making out of desperation. And therefore, he's called Nosan de Tzitzisa, Nosan of the spark of fire. Tosfos brings also that the Medrash says that whenever he would go around in the street, they would see a Ruchni, a stick of fire over his head. Amar Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, Have a Yesivna Bepirka. I was sitting one time in a shir. Listening to a shir. V'hava kamen namnem, and I was napping. I was dozing a little bit. V'chazoi b'chilma, and I saw in a dream during the shir the kaposhet yodeh the kiblei that a malach stretched out his hand and accepted this ukvan by Nechemya's tshuva, and now he had a new name, Nosan de Tzitzisa. So therefore, so the spark, the fire that came out when the Malach stretched out his hand to accept him, or as Tosfos says, the fire that they saw from then on shining over his head, for that he was called Nosan de Tzitzisa. So he's a tremendous example, again, of a great Baal Tshuva in history.
Why Rashi says Tzitzis Derosho, or Tzitzis
Derosho? That's another explanation. Right, you're right. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, right. I forgot to mention that. Thank you. That's another point that Rashi says the Malach took him and held him by the hair of his head. The Kisei Sroshim means by the hair of his head, like, so to speak, to schlep him up in front of the Kisei HaKavod to accept his tshuva. And for that also, because that's another reason why Tzitzisa, Meloshim Tzitzis Rosho, right?
Question.
Yeah.
Abba Avod de Rabbi Yirmiyah, did he do tshuva after his son became famous?
Doesn't say. I don't know if it says.
But he's called the father of Rabbi Yirmiyah. Isn't that strange?
Well, maybe. I mean, that could just be because his father. That could just be because his son is more famous than he is. I mean, you have a lot of times in shops like that where a person is identified by his son's name when his son is more famous than him. So it could be. It could be that it happened after his son became famous. It could be that it was before. We don't know. Whatever it is, he became a tremendous Baal Tshuva, and he's recognized for that as one of the great Baal Tshuva in history. Hadron Aloch Ben Memehim. The next perek that we're going to learn over here, now in this last perek by Mebehema, we talked about the various kinds of accessories and gear and whatnot that an animal is allowed to wear and not allowed to wear in the Shulchan Aruch. And now we're going to talk about similar things as far as human beings. We're going to start mainly by focusing on women, because obviously there are a lot of more jewelry and accessories and whatnot that women wear. Therefore, the perek is called Bamei Isha. But we're going to go through the perek first. Now, we have like this. When it comes to various kinds of accessories and jewelry and whatnot that women, or to a certain extent men, might wear, there's a few different kinds. There's ones where there's no problem wearing them on Shabbos. There's ones where there's an issur d'rabbanan to wear them on Shabbos. And then there's ones where there's an issur d'oraisa to wear them on Shabbos. So the ones where it's an issur d'oraisa, basically because it's a malacha of carrying, because these things, as we're going to learn later on in the parak, are things that are not necessary. For example, they're things that are not necessary. They're not jewelry. They're not ornaments. They're not clothing or whatever. And therefore, walking out with them on Shabbos would be considered carrying. We'll see in the middle of the perek. We'll have examples of those things. Then you have things that are also d'rabbanan, and there you have a few different kinds. So I'm going to start dealing in our Mishnah with a couple of different kinds. You have ones where you're not allowed to because the chachamim are concerned that the woman may take them off. And then she may end up carrying them. And the reason why she might take them off, as we'll see, there's going to be a couple of possibilities why a woman might take them off. One of them might be to show off to her friends. Another one, as we're going to see, might be because she needs the tovel, and they're going to be a chatzitza. So you have first of all those kinds, which are also the rabbanon on the grounds that she may take them off and carry them. Then you also have another kind that is, you also have other kinds that are also because they may fall off and she'll carry them. So those are the kind of things that we're going to talk about. That we're going to start in our Mishnah with things that are also d'rabbanan. We'll also talk about now a lot of the things we mention. We're going to find that it's not so simple. We do, in fact, find women wearing these things or things very similar to them nowadays. And how is that allowed? So we'll get to what the various hatayim are for that as well. But let's start first. The Mishnah says, "Bameh isha yoso, bameh eni yoso." What kind of things, what kind of jewelry and accessories and whatnot is a woman allowed to go out with on Shabbos, and what is she not? Now, you also, by the way, have a machloikas over here. You have a machloikas Rishonim, whether when we say allowed and not allowed to go out, now definitely she's allowed to wear them around. Now you have one possibility is you have Rishonim who learn that maybe she's not even allowed to wear them in her house because she may go out with them, because after all, the person doesn't usually check their jewelry and whatnot and take something off before they go out. Another way of looking at it is maybe it's allowed in the house, and maybe even in a chaser that has an eruv, just not in a chaser that doesn't have an eruv. So you have a few different possibilities within that. We'll get into that as we go along. So the Mishnah starts off, like take the isha loy bechutei semer v'loy bechutei pishtam v'loy beretzuris shibarosha. She's not allowed to go out on Shabbos with woolen strings or linen strings or ribbons that are on the hair of her head. So Rashi learns that all of these things we're talking about, that she braids them into her hair. So in other words, you have a woman makes herself braids. She braids into them a woolen string or a linen string or what have you. Then we're saying she's not allowed to wear that outside on Shabbos. Tosfos disagrees with that. Because we're going to learn in the Gemara, the reason why it's also is because if she has to tovel, she's going to have to take them out because they're going to be a chatzitza. And therefore, Tosa says, well, then in that case, if it's braided into her hair, she's anyway not going to be able to take it out of her hair because you can't unbraid a braid on Shabbos. So therefore, if the Tosfos learns, we're not talking about that they're braided into her hair. There it would actually be mutter. Rather, what we mean over here is that they're just tied around her hair, like you do, for example, like women do with hair ties or scrunchies or whatever, that sort of thing. So those things, she's not allowed. So those things, the Mishnah is saying, she's not allowed to wear outside on Shabbos. She's not allowed to travel with them any time on Shabbos or on weekday until she loosens them, because otherwise they'll prevent the water from getting onto her hair. And you have to have the mikvah water has to touch everywhere, including her hair. So that's group number one, things that she's not allowed to, because as the Gemara is going to say, if she ends up having to travel on Shabbos, then keep in mind in those days, women travel for a lot more purposes than just nowadays. Women travel just when they're nida, and in that case, fine. They know in advance when they're going to be traveling, but you had in those times when they also had, when they were also careful with the dinim of Tumah Vatara, then you also had a woman might unexpectedly have to travel in the middle of a Shabbos if she became tummy. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about. So that's group number one. Group number two, continues the Mishnah, the loibetetetet, so also a woman is not allowed to wear outside on Shabbos a totefes, we'll see in the Gemara what that is, v'loibet sarvitin, and also not sarvitin, we're going to see also in the Gemara what those are. So the ones that we're listing, these ones, beginning with totefes and sarvitin, the problem with them is that she may take them off and show them off to her friends. And then she's going to end up carrying them in Rosh Hashanah. So those are not allowed, this mancha'in and turin, if they're not sewn to her shetel or her hat or whatever. If they're sewn to the shetel or the hat or the tichel or whatever they wore on their heads in those days, then she's allowed to, because then the only way to show them off would be to take off the whole hat. And she's not going to do that in the Shosharabim. She's not allowed to uncover her hair. Although you have poskim who say that in that case, then that heter wouldn't apply to an unmarried girl. If an unmarried girl is wearing a hat on Shabbos, and it has, even though it has the tetefes or the tzavikin attached to it, she could conceivably take off the whole thing because she doesn't have the issue of uncovering her hair in public. Therefore, in fact, it would be also, therefore, it would be also for her even if they're sewn to the hat. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. The loy bekovel l'shus harabim. She's also not allowed to wear a kovel in l'shus harabim. We're going to see in the Gemara two possibilities what a kovel is. And we're going to see in the Gemara again exactly what the problem is with it. Again, we have to keep in mind everything in our Mishnah that we're talking about is all things that are also Drabbanan. And again, why would they be also Drabbanan? Is either they are jewelry, they are ornaments and whatever, and Minat Torah, there would be no problem. But again, the Drabbanan, you have the problem that either she may have to take them off for some reason. For example, the table, or because she may deliberately take them off to show her friends, or because they may fall off because they're loose, and then she'll carry them. So you have any of three possible reasons why these things would be offered up on them. So the kovel, we'll see, and once we see it, no matter what a kovel is, then we'll see what the problem is.
And this kovel is also Rishus HaRabim, and the chatzar is okay, the ones above, even though the chatzar is no good.
1 second, so that's what I was going to explain. Right, so the Mishnah says, V'loi v'kogol Rishus HaRabim. This one specifically, it says Rishus HaRabim, implying that she's allowed to go with it into a chatzar. So now you have, are we talking about that, so when it comes to all the other ones in the Mishnah over here, we're going to see later on in the Perek that those she's not even allowed to wear in a chatzar. So Rashi over there explains that it means even if the chatzar has an eruv, so you are allowed to carry around in it. Nevertheless, once she's wearing them in the chatzar, she may wind up walking out into the Rosh Hashanah with them also. And therefore Rashi learns that everything else, she also, even in a chatzar that has an eruv, but they're allowing her certain things, one of them being a kovel, and another one we'll see later on in the Perek, because the chacham didn't want to prevent her from wearing all of her ornaments, because otherwise she's going to be unattractive to her husband. But Chachamim still knew that it's important that she has to be attractive to her husband, and therefore they allowed her to wear certain things in the certain things in the chotzer, as long as the, Rashi says, as long as the chotzer has an eruv, and one of them is, and one of them is this kabul. As opposed to everything else, she can't even wear them in the chotzer. That's according to Rashi. Then you have, on the other hand, you have other rishonim who are more machmir than Rashi, and say that when we say that a kovel is not allowed in Rosh Hashanah, it means a kovel is allowed in a chaser, fine, and in the house, but all the other ones not only not in the chaser, but not even inside the house, because she may walk out with them while still wearing them out of the house. And then on the other hand, you have an opinion that's more makel the other way around, that says that all of that, that any of these things mentioned in the Mishnah, she's allowed to wear in the house, and the iser is only to wear them, and the iser is only to wear them in a chotzer that doesn't have an eruv. So you have three different opinions among Rishonim on the subject. Okay. Onward, continues the Mishnah. So again, we're saying the kobol is an exception. A kobol she's allowed to wear even when and where she's not allowed to wear the other ones. Where exactly those places are that she's allowed to wear it when she's not allowed to wear the other ones, that's what you have the three-way machlokas for shining on. Continues the Mishnah. The loy be'irshol zahav, she's also not allowed to wear a city of gold. Now, here also, you're going to have two different understandings of what that means. We know definitely that it has something, we know definitely it has a picture of Yerushalayim on it, but Rashi explains over here. Rashi uses a French word nuska, which means a brooch or a pin or something like that that goes on the clothing. So if it's pinned onto the clothing, Rashi says she's not allowed to wear that. There are other Tosfos later on explains that it means actually it's a kind of tiara. So according to Rashi, it's a brooch, and according to Tosfos, it's a tiara. Either way, it has a picture of Yerushalayim on it, so we're saying she's not allowed to wear it outside, again, for the reason because she may take it off and show it off to her friends and then end up carrying it in Rosh Hashanah. The loy b'kafla, also not wearing a kafla, which is a kind of thing that goes around her neck. We'll talk about it on Amud Beis. The loy b'nizamim, and also not with a nose ring. Now earrings are different because again, earrings usually a woman is, and Shulchan Aruch points out, usually a married woman when she wears a tichel or a shetel or what have you, usually her ears are covered, so it would be a big bother for her to uncover her ears of the tichel or whatever and then take out the earrings and show them off to her friends. Therefore, earrings would be mustard, but a nose ring is much easier to take off, and again, therefore, you have the problem that she may take it off to show off to her friends. So if in fact we're talking about a place where the ears are generally not covered, then you would have an issue with that also. So again, we have to deal with the various hatadim that you have nowadays for women to wear these kinds of jewelry, which we'll talk about a little later.
It's just strange that when these things take on a nose thing, it hurts. And second of all, a nose thing is right in front. You can see it, where an earring sometimes covered by the shape or by the tichel. What are you taking it off the shoulder? If a person is wearing it, the nose thing, you see it. You're talking to them.
Well, I mean, if you want to show them, first of all, as far as if the nose ring hurts to take off, I mean, I guess it depends on the type of nose ring, I guess. I don't know. I've never worn one. I have no idea. And nobody else I know has ever worn one either, you know. As far as that she might still want to take it off and show it off, the point is, though, that, you know, let's say, for example, so it might have, you know, might have nice designs on it or whatever. You know, what are they going to look closely and, you know, get right in her face and look closely at her nose? No. So therefore you have an issue with it. Because she may take it off because she wants to show off the detailed designs and things on it. Okay. Anyway, so that's as far as that. The loy tabas she'en olei achoytam, and also not with a ring that doesn't have a signet on it. Now they had different. Now you have this, in those times they had two kinds of rings. You have the kind of ring that has a signet on it. It has a seal on it that you use to stamp on papers or documents or what have you. And then you have the kind that's not. Like you have the kedushin rings that a chassan gives his wife under the chuppah. You have a diamond ring. You have a pearl ring or whatever. All of those kinds are the kind that don't have a signet. So those were saying she's not allowed to wear midrabanan. Because again, now the kind with a signet, it would actually be considered carrying on Shabbos for her to wear it, because that's not the normal kind of ring that a woman wears. A woman doesn't usually wear a ring with a signet. So therefore, for her to carry one, for her to wear one that has a signet, would actually be considered carrying. But here we're talking about one that doesn't have a signet, a plain ring, or one with a stone in it, or what have you. So therefore, so it's only often, it's a rabbanon, again, because she may take it off, then show it off to her friends. The loy b'macha, she ain't in a kuvah, and also she's not allowed to go out on Shabbos with a pin, stuck in her clothing that does not have a hole in it. So if it has a hole in it, again, we're going to learn later on in the parak, then it's not considered a tachshit at all. Then she would actually be chayav chasas for wearing it on Shabbos. But here we're saying the kind that is a tachshit is also in the drabon. Now, so what's the deal as far as the fact that women do wear that women do wear tachshitim? So there's a couple of different possibilities that it mentions in Shulchan Aruch. One aspect of it is that maybe in the Rishonim talk about the idea that they didn't have a true Rishut Rabim, because you have the opinion, the famous opinion, according to Rashi, that you need to have 600,000 people go in a street every day for it to be considered Rishut Rabim. And by the time of the Rishonim, they didn't have cities anywhere near that size. So therefore, that's one heter that the Rishonim bring for why women should be allowed to wear such things out in the street on Shabbos. Some of the poskim though don't like that heter, because that doesn't work in all places. You do have places after all where there is a Rishut Rabim, besides which also not necessarily is the halacha like Rashi anyway that you need the 600,000. The Gemara never mentioned the 600,000 after all. So they mention another heter as well, which is that nowadays, it's very uncommon to have this kind of thing that women actually take off their jewelry and show it off to their friends. Because the Aruch HaShulchan actually points out an important point. He says in those days, women generally spent most of the day at home. They ventured out very little. In fact, even in the Rambam writes that in his times also, at least in the countries that he lived in the various Muslim countries, it was very common that women basically stay home all day and they go out once in a great while. So therefore, when she's wearing jewelry, then that's going to be something very, 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 very important to them and very something they really want to show off to their friends. And therefore, there's a very high likelihood that they're going to take it off and show it to their friends. But nowadays, where jewelry is much more common, Rabbeinu Tam also mentioned an expression that the women then were shachsoniyos. They were very proud of themselves, and when they had a lot of jewelry, they wanted to show it off to their friends. Whereas nowadays, the women aren't necessarily like that. And also, Tosfos says for that reason, men are not like that also, that they tend to like to show off their jewelry. Therefore, Rabbeinu Tam says that these dinim apply only, that's why we're mentioning only women in this connection. Men, according to him, would be allowed to wear various kinds of ornaments as well. Not everybody agrees to that. And in fact, we know, for example, when it comes to wearing a watch, let's say, that Abdullah, women wear them, men don't. But anyway, one point is that the post can mention is that you're allowed to do such things again because at least the ones that were saying that you might take off and show off, so the ones that might fall off and you might carry them, those would still remain also. At least if we say we have a Rishus Rabbah. But the ones that she might take off to show off to her friends, the person can say maybe nowadays is not as much of an issue because they're not prone to do that. And therefore, in Shulchan Aruch, it still mentions that still a person better should be careful for themselves, but you can't tell them not to, especially because they're not necessarily going to listen. And as we learned before, as we learned a couple of days ago, when it comes to giving tzedakah, when it comes to dinim d'rabbanan, if they're not going to listen, then we say mutav yir shoygin bal yumazidin. That better, if they're anyway going to be doing the iser, better let them do it. Better let them do it accidentally rather than on purpose. So those are the various ideas that the post can mention why it is that nowadays you very commonly have that women wear jewelry and nobody says anything. Okay. Anyway, so let's start the Gemara. So Gemara asks, we said in the Mishnah, as far as we said, the post also mentions another point over here also, which is We're going to say in the Gemara now that the reason why she's not allowed to wear the woolen or the woolen threads, the linen threads or ribbons in her hair is because she has to take them off if she has to tovel. So why don't we say the same thing about regular clothing? If she's going to have to take that off to tovel also, what if she ends up carrying that? Tosha says you don't make such a gzeirah with large pieces of clothing that are based, that are a major part of a wardrobe. You're not going to say that she may end up not putting it back on after she tovels. But small things like this, small little ornaments like that, that maybe even on weekdays would be very common. She's not going to bother putting the ribbons back into her hair after she tovels. So therefore, on Shabbos we make a. Therefore, on Shabbos we say that she's not allowed to wear it. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Tzvila man b'chashma. We said that a woman is not allowed to wear on Shabbos these woolen or linen threads in her hair or ribbons, and we said that she's not allowed to tovel with them until she loosens them. What is toveling have to do anything with it? And why we're talking about dinim? We're talking about the dinim of Shabbos over here. How does the dinim of toveling all of a sudden come in? So actually, the Tosfos read says, what kind of a question is that? It's very common in a Mishnah, once we're mentioning a din about something, to mention another din about it as well, even though it doesn't belong to you. So he says, the Gemara's not really asking it as a question. The Gemara knows the answer that it's going to give, that the fact that you can't tovel with them on is a reason to ask them on Shabbos. But that's how the style of the Gemara is, a question and answer style, and therefore it does that. Okay, so the question is, again, what does Tzvila have to do with it? The Mishnah is actually giving us a reason. Why is she not allowed to wear these woolen or linen threads in her hair? Again, according to Rashi, braided into her hair, and according to Tosfos, just wrapped around it, is because the Chachamim said that if she has to tovel on weekdays, then she's not allowed to tovel if she's tummy, unless she loosens them, because otherwise there's going to be a chasita. And the kibben to b'chol l'tifa b'elad t'kirafim, since on weekdays she would have to loosen them first, the Shabbos l'tifa, then on Shabbos we're not allowing her to go out with them, because she might end up having to tovel for the sake of a mitzvah, meaning not again tovel, not toveling for the sake of, let's say, because she's nidda or what have you, because again, that's pre-scheduled. She knows that she's going to have to do that on Shabbos. We mean, let's say she became Tommy with a sheret or some such thing, and she's going to go tovel right there on the spot in order to be tovel. So therefore, so she may have to tovel on Shabbos. The shalya lahu, so then she's going to undo them and then tovel, and then she's not necessarily going to put them back on afterwards, but also last year, Dalat Amos, Rosh Hashanah, and she's going to wind up carrying them for Amos and Rosh Hashanah. Now, what you have is like this. Midaraisa, for something to be a chasita, it has to be that it covers most of the body and that you're masked on it. Midrabanan, it's one or the other. Either it covers most of the body or you're masked on it. Now, so the question is over here, in the case of these ribbons or strings or whatever, they don't cover most of the body. She's not masked on them. So even Midrabanan, they're not a chasita. What's the problem? So now you have like this. There are Ga'onim and Rishonim who learn that the hair is considered separate from the body as far as that goes. When we say that a chasita covers most of the body, then that if it covers most of the body, it's considered a chasita, they learn, and Rashi over here says essentially the same thing, that the hair is considered separate from the body. If most of the hair, or not even most of the hair, but most of the strands of hair have something covering part of them, then it would be considered a chasita. Now the Rambam and various other Rishonim disagree with that, and they would say that the fact is that when you wash, the fact is we do see that women are masked to remove these things when they're washing their hair, not for the purpose of toveling. So therefore, it is considered masked olav, even though maybe for purposes of toveling, they would figure it's not so important. So in other words, the Rambam would understand in our Gemara over here that because she is masked to take it off when she's washing her hair, therefore it's considered a chasita when she's toveling on the ground of masked olav, but not on the ground of ruboy, because the Rambam would learn it's not ruboy because the hair is still not a majority of the body. Okay. So that's the reason, again, that's the reason why the Mishnah is saying she can't wear that first group of things, because she may take them off in order to tovel on Shabbos, and then she's going to not put them back on and end up carrying them. Okay. So now if Kahana asks Rab in this connection, What about if you have hollow hair ties that are woven? So you have the woven together. Rashi describes shausharas shochutin chalulas v'agulay. You have strings. You have chains of thread that are hollow and round. So sort of like you have they're kind of like knitted or lanyard or something. One layer woven on top of another or whatever, but they're hollow. So if a woman uses that for a hair tie, would that be a problem of chatzitza? Amalei, so Rab answers in Ari Kamris. You're talking about something which is woven, or knitted or something like that. You should know. Call shahu orig legazu. Whenever there's something that's woven, the chachamim did not have to make a zera on it because the water will easily penetrate it. So therefore, there's no problem. So there's no problem, and she would actually be allowed to wear it even when she toivels. In the halacha of tefillah, it says that it's not necessarily so simple. Mm-hmm. It is true that if it's like this, where it's hollow on the inside, then fine, it's not a chatzitza. But if it's made out of cloth, even though it's woven and it's not hollow, then maybe it would be a chatzitza. So actually, it would come out that when a woman is toveling, she would have to remove such hair ribbons or whatever, even if they're woven, as long as they're not hollow. If they're hollow, then technically she doesn't need to remove them because then the water will penetrate them regardless. Okay. It's Marnami. We said also Amar Avuna Breda Rishur. Koshu orig, any kind of hair ties or whatever that are made of woven material. The Chachamim did not make a zera that she's not allowed to wear it on Shabbos, because again, if the reason she's not allowed to is because she may have to toivel and then she may take it off, these kinds of things she's allowed to toivel with them on her hair. Therefore, there's no problem. The Ikka, the Amri, another version of what Rav Huna Ber Yehuda Rishua said is Amr Rav Huna Ber Yehuda Rishua, Chazina la'achvot ibalai kastin alayhu. I saw my sisters when they had hollow ribbons like that in their hair, when they're washing their hair, I saw that they're not masked to remove them. So therefore, that shows that, in other words, the same way as they're not masked to remove them when they wash their hair. So the same way, obviously she wants to make sure all of her hair gets washed. So we see, therefore, that they didn't care. So we see why? Because water can penetrate them. So if they can penetrate it for that, then therefore they can penetrate it as far as tefila as well, because it's not going to be a chassidah. Okay, the Gemara asks, so we have two different versions of what Rav Huna Breda Rishua said. One is just that he said flat out that anything that's woven is not an issue. Another one he's saying that I saw my sisters are not masked on it. So what's the difference between those two lashonis? The difference is, ikabinayo jitznifon. The difference would be, what if those ribbons are dirty? According to the first version, that it's just a general rule, anything that's woven, or according to the Ravid, woven and hollow or whatever, then we're not gozer on it. Okay, hani nami or. It doesn't matter if it's dirty. The fact is it's hollow. The fact is water can penetrate anywhere in it. Therefore, it's not a problem, and therefore she'd be allowed to wear it as far as toveling, and she'd be allowed to wear it, therefore, as far as Shabbos as well. Ulahach lishna da'amit v'shem kapeda. But according to the second version, that you're saying, that Rav Huna Ber Yehuda Rishua is saying, that I saw my sisters are not masked on it, well then, tivin de tnicha, well, if they're dirty, mikvah tafda alayo, she is going to mind it, because she doesn't want the dirt to get onto her hair. So then in that case, she would remove it. And in that case, then, applying that to toveling, same thing. If the ribbons were dirty, then she would make sure to take them off before she tovels, because she doesn't want the dirt to get all over her hair. Therefore, you'd be back to the same problem, that she's going to take them off and end up carrying them in a shofarabim. So that would be the difference between the two lashonos. The Rosh gives a different understanding, that nifon means if there are things that are going to get dirty. So he understands that we're talking about, let's say, for example, if these ribbons are made with gold thread or whatever. So those are the kind of things that she's going to be particular about. She doesn't want them to get dirty while she's washing them. So therefore, she would take them off in order that they don't get dirty. and therefore those would be according to the first Lashon. Again, there's still no problem, because even if they're made with gold thread, they're still woven, and they're made in such a way that the water can penetrate, so it wouldn't be a problem. But according to the second Lashon, that it's a matter of her being makbid, if they're made out of gold thread, she is going to be makbid, because she doesn't want them to get dirty, and therefore she wouldn't be allowed to wear them on Shabbos. So that would be the difference between the two Lashon. Rashi brings from his Rebbe, from his Rebbeim over here, that the difference between whether they're dirty or not has to do with whether they're considered a chafitza. Rashi says, I don't like that explanation, though, because if the fact is, who cares whether they're dirty or not? The water gets through them, so they're not a chafitza. And if you're going to say that, whatever you're makbid on is considered a chafitza, then how is the first Lashon allowing it? Everybody agrees that if you're makbid, then it's poison, and then it's possible to tefillah. Okay. So now let's get into a little more discussion about this matter of chafitza and see how it applies to cases of our Mishnah as far as Hilchos Shabbos. Shnanhofen, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Mikrois, the elu chotitzin ba'adam, the following things are considered a chafitza by a person when they travel: chote seme v'chote pishtan, woolen strings or linen strings, like we said in our Mishnah, v'aretzuit shebarashi abonis, or ribbons that girls have in their hair. So all those kinds of things would be considered a chafitza. And by the same token, then, we're saying in our Mishnah she can't wear them on Shabbos because she's going to have to take them off in order to travel. Rabbi Yehuda says, shall seme v'shal seyar, if they're made out of wool, or if they're made out of hair, Rabbi Yehuda says, ein chotzin, then they're not a chafitza, mepnei shamayim boin behen, because water can penetrate them. Okay. So first of all, so Omer Rabbuna, thus far the Mishnah, so Omer Rabbuna v'cholam v'roshe habonis shenidu. All of those things that we're mentioning, woolen threads and linen threads and ribbons, and Rabbi Yehuda is also mentioning ones made out of hair, we're all talking about ones that are on the hair of the head. In other words, you shouldn't think, as we're going to see in the Gemara, that we're going to see what Rabbi Yehuda means by that. On the face of it, what he means is on the hair as opposed to on other areas of the body. You could conceivably have other areas where she wears such strings or such ribbons, and Rav Huna is saying the Mishnah is not talking about those. Rav Huna would be saying that the Mishnah is only talking about ones that are on her hair. So Masif, Rav Yosef, from Utimai, Rav Yosef asks on that, what do you mean? What exactly is Rav Huna coming to tell us? To exclude what? Elamed l'mu'uti d'tzaber, are you talking about that Rav Huna wants us to know that the Tanakama who's saying that woolen threads, for example, or chafitza against Rabbi Yehuda, Rav Huna is telling us that we're talking about where it's on her hair as opposed to where else? Do we mean as opposed to Ilema de Ma'uti L'Tzaver? Do we mean as opposed to ones that might be around her neck? Well, the question is, or demai, what are these strings made out of that hypothetically she might have tied around her neck, which Rav Huna is telling us the Mishnah would be saying are not a chafitza? Ilema de Ma'uti D'Tzaver, are you going to say that it means woolen ones, that in other words, if she were to have that, so woolen threads that are braided into her hair or wound around her hair would be a chafitza, let's say, but woolen threads that she wears around her neck would not be a chafitza. The question is why? Hashta racha gabi kosher choytis. If you're telling me that even a soft thing, which is wool, and when you put it on top of something stiff like hair, it would be considered a chafitza because not going to allow the water to penetrate. Racha gabi rachma boya. How much more so if you're talking about something soft like wool on something soft, the skin of the neck? For sure, it's going to be a chafitza. If you're going to say that, Tanakama says that wool prevents the water from getting through to the hair, it's for sure going to prevent it from getting through to the skin of the neck. So how could Rav Huna be telling us that that wouldn't be considered a chafitza? The Ela Lamauti de Chote Pishtan. So you're going to say Rav Huna is not talking about the woolen threads, he's talking about the linen threads. Okay, linen threads are stiffer than ones of wool. So maybe you're going to say then that maybe those are not considered a chafitza if they're on the neck. Same problem. Hashta kosha agabi kosha choitis. If you're telling me that even stiff linen threads are a chafitza when they're on stiff hair and they don't allow the water to get through, kosha agabi rachni boya. So how much more so if it's something hard on top of something soft? Again, because what happens is when they're on the soft skin of the neck, they're more easily able to dig into the skin, and therefore they'd be all the more chafitza. So essentially, in other words, the same problem is The same problem exists with wool or with linen. Wool is softer, linen is stiffer, but both of them, if you're going to say that they're a chatzitza on the hair, surely they have to be a chatzitza on the neck as well. So what does Rav Huna mean? Ela, Amar Rav Yosef, Hainu Taima de Rav Huna. So no, Rav Yosef says, no, we are indeed distinguishing between threads that she wears on her hair versus on her neck, but the reason why Rav Huna is making that distinction is Hainu Taima de Rav Huna, Lefisha in Isha Chenekes Es Asma, because she's not going to choke herself with these. She's not going to tie them on to her neck so tightly that they're going to dig into the skin and she's going to feel strangled by them. So therefore, necessarily, if she's wearing wool or linen thread around her neck, then they're going to be loosely enough that the water will be able to get in underneath them. So that's what Rav Huna wants to tell us. You don't have to be concerned about a problem with chatzitza, that they might be too tight, because she'll know if they're too tight. She'd feel that they're too tight around her neck, and she'd automatically loosen them, because she doesn't want to feel that she's choking. Therefore, there's no problem. That's why Rav Huna is telling us the Mishnah is stressing that only ones that she wears on her hair are a problem of chatzitza, because on her hair, obviously, she can tie them as tightly as she wants around, or braid them as tightly as she wants into her hair, and it's not gonna hurt her, as opposed to around her neck, it will hurt her, and therefore, she's not going to do that. Okay. The problem with that is, the problem with that is, Eitzvei Abaya says, I have a contradiction from that. We learn in a brisa, habonis yotis b'chutin shabaz nehen, girls are allowed to go out on Shabbos with threads that are in their ears. A girl has her ears pierced often when she's very young, and she's not necessarily old enough at that point to start wearing earrings. So therefore, what they do similar things nowadays, they do similar things even nowadays. If they pierce their ears when they're not yet ready for earrings, is they put something temporary in there to hold the hole open, because otherwise it's going to close. So in times of the Mishnah and the Gemara, they would put swings in there. They would put a swing into the hole, and eventually, when she's old enough, then they'll take out the swing and they'll fit her for earrings. So she's allowed to go out with those on Shabbos, says the Braita. Avaloi b'chavokin shabasadarehen, but they're not allowed to go out with ribbons tied around their neck. Now, v'yamet enish ha'chenekat asma, if you're telling me that she's not going to wear something so tightly around her neck that she's going to feel strangled, then chabok and shabbat sarayin am I loy. Why can't they wear these ribbons around their neck? Obviously, if the whole point is, again, the ribbons we're not assuming is the kind of thing where she's going to take off and show her friends. They're not the kind of thing that's important enough to bother doing that. The problem with ribbons, as we're saying, is that she may have to tovel. Remember, in those times, when we're talking about Tumah V'Tahara, unmarried girls might have to tovel as well if they became tomei with a sheriff or what have you. So, but if you're saying that she's not going to tie it around her neck tightly enough to strangle herself, then what's the problem? It's going to be loose, so it's not going to be a chatzitza, so she'll be allowed to wear that into the mikveh, because she's not going to take it off. What's the problem? Amar Ravina. So Ravina says, we're not just talking about any kind of ribbons when we say that she's not allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Hocha b'kafla, you know. The Braita is actually mentioning, is actually talking about a kind of ornament called a kafla. We actually mentioned in the Mishnah, we didn't yet define what a kafla is. We mentioned in the Mishnah. So Rashi explains that a kafla looks sort of like a bib. It looks sort of like a bib to keep food from falling onto her clothing. So it has around the top of it, it has holes where you put a ribbon in through the holes, and then she ties it to the top of her dress. Now, what happens with that kind of kafla is the isha cheneka b'sasma, that kind of thing a woman does wear very tightly. Now, it has very wide ribbons. The ribbons themselves are wide, so they don't dig into her skin as much and make it feel like she's choking, but they are adraba, because it has those ribbons, and they're wide ribbons, she may well wear it tightly, because in those times it was considered an attractive thing for a woman to be fat. Nowadays, of course, it's the opposite. Women want to look as thin as possible, but in those days, you have to realize, food shortages were very common. So, adraba, if you were fat, it means you're well fed. So, therefore, so women would like to look that way. So, So therefore, so you'd have, they'd wear the kafla in such a way where they would dafka keep the ribbons, they're wide ribbons, so they don't dig into her skin and make her feel choke, but they would dafka wear them as tightly as possible in order to cause the flesh to stick out around her neck and around her cheeks and make them look fatter make her look fatter than she really is. So for that reason, for that kind of thing, So that's the kind of thing that we're saying, therefore, that she's not allowed to wear, that she's not allowed to wear on Shabbos, because, again, given that she's wearing it so tightly, she may have to tovel, and then she's going to take it off because she has to, otherwise it's a chapitza, and therefore she's going to end up carrying it on Shabbos. So in other words, Ravina is saying there's a difference between some ribbons or strings by themselves, which are narrow, and they easily dig into the skin, and therefore she's not going to wear them very tightly, versus the wide ribbons of a kafla, whether the wide straps, the ribbons, or whatever of a kafla, which she may well wear them tightly enough in order to because she wants to look fatter, and therefore she may end up having to tovel on Shabbos. Now, Tosfos mentioned in the Mishnah, we mentioned kafla in the second group of things, the kind that she's not allowed to wear because she may take it off and show it to her friends. Why are we here? Are we mentioning it among the ones that she may have to tovel and take it off? The Tosfos actually distinguishes between two different kinds of kafla. Not two different kinds of kafla, rather, but two different ways of wearing the kafla. Some women would wear it very tightly, like we said, because they want it to look fatter than they really are. But what if you have, let's say, for example, a woman is already fat. She doesn't want to look even fatter than that. So then she would wear it loosely. So it's two different cases. If she's wearing it tightly, then you have the problem that she may have to tovel. So that would be the first category. And if she's wearing it loosely, then you have the other problem that she may take it off and show it off to her friends. Okay. So that would be the difference. So again, that would be the difference so far. So Rav Huna is telling us that ribbons around her hair are chafitza. Ribbons around her neck are not a chafitza unless they're very wide ribbons that are attached to a kafla. And then we're saying she wouldn't be allowed to because those she does wear tight. We said in the Mishnah that we quoted before, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shal Tzema V'Shal Tzeir Ein Chotzitin V'Pnei Shamayim Boim Behem. We said Rabbi Yehuda says that string that she has in her hair made out of wool or made out of hair are not a chatzitza because water can penetrate them. Omer Rabbi Yosef, Omer Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shmuel, Halacha Rabbi Yehuda B'Chotei Seinu. The Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to threads or strings made out of hair, that those would not be considered a chatzitza. Rishonim point out, based on Gemara's elsewhere, that if they're made out of one or two hairs woven together, then they actually could be a chafitza, only if they're made out of three or more are they not, because once you have hair being kind of stiff, if you have three or more of them are wound together, wound or braided or whatever, together to make the ribbon, then necessarily they're going to be loosely enough that water can penetrate. So we're saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda as far as one's made out of hair. Now, the Tanna Kamma hadn't said anything about hair. Omalei Abaya halacha mitzvah b'tzvi. So what are you telling me? The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, implying that the Tanna Kamma argues. The Tanna Kamma never said anything about hair. So why should we assume that Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing with him? The chi tema, so you're going to say, okay, evidently the Tanna Kamma did mention something about hair. It just wasn't recorded in the Mishnah. Ilav d'sham inen mitanna kamma d'ayri b'chotei seir. You could argue that, okay, listen, you know why Rabbi Yehuda is mentioning hair? Because evidently the Tanna Kamma had said something about hair, and if he hadn't, then Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't have had reason to mention it. So, okay, the Mishnah didn't record the Tanna Kamma's opinion on hair, but let's say maybe in fact the Tanna Kamma said that. You don't have to say that way. You don't have to understand it that way. The Dilma Kashem Kama. Maybe the reason Rabbi Yehuda is mentioning hair is to point out a similarity. Maybe he's saying just like. He's saying, maybe he's saying to the Tanna Kamma, you actually agree when it comes to ones made out of hair, that it's not a chafitza, because water can penetrate. Why don't you agree with me also when it comes to wool? In other words, so you could understand that the Tanna Kamma had disagreed on both of them, and Rabbi Yehuda is therefore, and there's a machlokas on both of them. You could equally understand that the machlokas is only on wool, and Rabbi Yehuda is mentioning hair only as a contrast. Why is it that you chachamim hold that wood is a chatzitza, And why is it that you Chachamim hold that wool is a chatzitza and you agree that hair is not? So we don't necessarily have to say that the Tanakhama disagrees on hair. So why are you saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to hair, implying that there's an argument? And in fact, Itmar. In fact, Reb Nachman says in the name of Shmuel that the Chachamim do agree with Reb Yehuda when it comes to strings made out of hair. So there's no reason to say that the halacha is like Reb Yehuda. However, there's a different girsa that Masoret HaShas brings, which is Ela Moedim Itmar. So rather, the correct way to say it is not that the halacha is like Reb Yehuda, but rather that the Chachamim agree with Reb Yehuda. And then you have a machlokes Amoraim on that subject. Whether in fact they argue. So Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in a Braisa. Chote Tzemer Chotzin, that strings made out of wool are chatzitza on her hair. Chote Seir Einin Chotzin, but strings made out of hair are not chatzitza. Rabbi Yehuda, and Rishol Tzemer, Rishol Seir, Ein Chosidin, and Rabbi Yehuda says that wool and hair are not a chasidza. So therefore, so we see from that braisa that the Chachamim are not actually arguing with Rabbi Yehuda. They agree with him on hair. They're only disagreeing with him on wool. So Omer of Nachli, Yisim Nami Deika. In fact, you can see that from the wording later in a Mishnah later on in our text. The Mishnah later on, when it mentions things that you are allowed to wear out of outside on Shabbos, the Mishnah says, Yotze Isha B'chutei Seir, a woman is allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing strings or ribbons made out of hair, Vein Mishalah, whether it was made from her own hair that was cut off and now she's using as a hair ribbon, or to braid into her hair, as Rashi says, Vein Mishalchavita, or whether the hair came from a different woman, so that's allowed on Shabbos. So we have to ask Mani. Now, which Tana would that be like? Elamed of Yehuda, would it be like Rabbi Yehuda? Then why only mention hair? I feel a chute semer nami. Rabbi Yehuda would say that it would be allowed even with woolen ones. Because again, we're saying that wool is not the kind of thing she's going to show off to her friend. Again, remember that wool is the first kind of thing where she's not allowed to wear it on Shabbos because she may need to take it off the table. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says she doesn't need to because wool is not going to be a chasitza because water will penetrate it. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah there should have said, if that Mishnah is like Rabbi Yehuda, then it should have said the bigger chiddush, that she's allowed to wear even woolen ribbons in her hair on Shabbos because they're not a chatzitza, and we would understand all the more so ones made out of hair, which is stiffer. So obviously it's not according to Rabbi Yehuda. El olav rabbanon. Evidently that Mishnah later in the parak must be according to the rabbanon. So we see from that that the Chachamim do not disagree when it comes to ones made out of hair. They agree that those are not a chatzitza. Good, Shmamina, that proves it, that they don't disagree on hair. They only disagree with Rabbi Yehuda on wool. Okay, so that's that. So the bottom line we have so far is that woolen or linen threads or ribbons in hair are a chatzitza. If they're around her neck, then they're not a chatzitza, unless they belong to a kafla, which in that case we said she may dafka wear them tighter in order to look fat. So then it would be a chatzitza. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, ones made out of wool in her hair are not a chatzitza. Ones made out of hair in her hair are not a chatzitza, according to anybody. Then we said in the Mishnah, loy b'taytetah. We said another thing a woman is not allowed to wear on Shabbos outside is a taytetah. Now again, we have to remember, now we're dealing with ones in the Mishnah where either the problem is because they're loose and they may fall off, or because most of them are because she may take them off and show them off to her friends and then carry them in her shofar. So what is a taytetah? Amar Rav Yosef, chumarta d'ktitza. It means a kind of a knot that she wears against Ein Hara. Chumarta means a knot. Tifta means to pluck or to harvest or whatever. So like it plucks away, it removes the effect of an Ein Hara. So she wears it. So she wears it in order to avoid the effect of an Ein Hara. Rabbi Nachman explains specifically that it means like a necklace made out of certain kinds of stones that have properties against the Ein Hara. It's brought in various foreign from the Rishonim, that certain stones, that certain precious or semi-precious stones have powers against various things. One of them, certain kinds have powers against Ayin Hara, they have certain segulas, and therefore, so we're talking about this, so it could be, so either we're talking about, again, according to Rashi, we're talking about a knot, so like a certain kind of knot that she makes and she wears as a necklace or something in order to avoid Ayin Hara. And according to Rabbi Chanano, it is actually a necklace, but it's made out of precious or semi-precious stones that are tied together or whatever for that purpose. So Rabbi Yosef is saying that's what she's not allowed to wear on Shabbos. Amalei Abaya. So Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, what's the problem with wearing that on Shabbos? Kehebik kamuya to kameya mumcha v'tishrei. That should be like a kameya made by an expert, which we touched on it briefly in the previous parak, and we're going to learn in more detail further on in our parak, on Daf Samach Aleph, that you're allowed to wear a kameya on Shabbos, which is the same kind of thing. It's something that has a segula, that it has healing properties, and you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. You're allowed to wear it on Shabbos as long as it's known that it has healing powers. So this kind of chumauta, this kind of knot or necklace, should be the same kind of thing. Why shouldn't she be allowed to wear it on Shabbos? Ela, Amr of Yehuda, Mishmei Abaya, Akuzainu. So rather, Rav Yehuda says in the name of Abaya that actually what the tetepet in our Mishnah is something that in Aramaic is called Akuzainu, which is, Rashi defines that as Rashi used the French word frontal, which means something like a tiara that they wear on not so much a tiara, actually, more like we're gonna see soon. It means more like a ribbon or a bow or something that goes on her forehead from one ear to the other, but sort of like a hairband kind of. So that's what we're saying. She's not allowed to wear that on Shabbos again, because she may take it off and show it off to her friends. Tani Nami Hochi, we learned similarly in a Braisa, a definition of tetefes, that it amounts to this apuzainu, this hairband or forehead band or something. The Braisa says, Yotze isha b'tzvocha muzhebes, a woman is allowed to go out on Shabbos with a tichel that has gold, or tichel or a half or whatever, that has gold threads in it. There's not a problem that she may take it off and show it to her friends, because then she'd have to uncover her hair to do that, and she's not going to do that in public. She's also then allowed to wear a tetefes or sarvitin that are attached to it, because as we learned in the Mishnah, then again, in order to show them off to her friends, she'd have to take it off, and again, she's not going to take it off in public, because she's not allowed to uncover her hair in public, so that would be allowed. So we see, therefore, that a tetefes is something that is attached to her hat or to her tichel or something, so we see that it's not or necklace or something that Rabbi Yosef was describing, but rather this apuzainu with this forehead band that we're describing.
Okay. Any connection with totafos?
So it is actually totafos is something also that you wear on your forehead. Yeah. So it's actually this totafos is somewhat similar to that in that sense. Yeah. Okay. So now let's define exactly what a tetefes is and what sarvitin is. So, ezer tetefes, ezer sarvitin. So what is the definition? What exactly is a tetefes and what is a sarvitin? Amar abo, tetefes is hamukefes lo me'ozen lo'ozen. The tetefes is something that goes from one ear to another, so sort of like a headband or a forehead band or something. And in fact, yeah, it's called a tetefes, but it's placed in a similar place on the head to where tefillin are worn. And in fact, also, it's similar in that sense to the tzitz of the Kohen Gadol. The tzitz of the Kohen Gadol also he wore on his forehead, and it went from one ear to another. So the tetefes is something similar that women wear. And sarvitin, hamagin lo ab l'chayeha. Sarvitin are things that hang down until her cheeks. So they're things that hang down from her hat or from her headband or whatever until her cheeks. Those are called the sarvitin. So again, we're saying she can't wear those on Shabbos unless they're sewn on to her hat or to her tichel or whatever before Shabbos, because then obviously she's not going to take them off on Shabbos. Amar Rav Huna, so Rav Huna tells us about the sarvitin, by the way, you should know, and poor women make these sarvitin out of colored out of colored pieces of cloth. Ashiras osinoyt shel kesef shel zahav. Rich women make them of gold and silver. Now, what's the point? Why does Rav Huna want to inform us of that? So there's three different ways of explaining it that we're showing him how. The Rosh says that the Gemara wants to tell us that it means that given that we're saying you're not allowed to wear the Savitin, again, unless they're attached to her hat, because she may take them off and show them off to her friends, then the Rosh says what that means, therefore, is that a poor woman, if she's wearing these ones made out of colored pieces, that she's not allowed to wear them on Shabbos, again, unless they're sewn on, because for her, that's her ornament, so she's going to take them off and show them off to her friends. The Ritva says the other way around. It's teaching us a kula, suppose a rich woman wears the gold or silver ones, and she's not allowed to wear those on Shabbos unless they're sewn on before Shabbos. But if, let's say, she happens to decide to wear one Shabbos, she decides to wear the ones made out of colored pieces of cloth, then she'd be allowed to, says the Ritva, because for her, they're not considered such ornaments that she'd take them off and show them off to her friends. And then the Rambam just mentions that she's not allowed to wear ones made out of gold or silver. And then one of the notes of Caleb on the Rambam says that maybe the Rambam understands over here that the ones made out of colored cloth, everybody is allowed to wear on Shabbos, because those, nobody, even a poor woman, is going to take off and show off, and it's only the ones made out of gold or silver that she's likely to take off and show off. Okay, so those are three different opinions about what Rav Huna is telling us about the Sarvichin. Okay, so we'll stop over here, and we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with learning more about the various kinds of jewelry that can and can't be worn. And actually, the focus tomorrow is going to be a little less on jewelry and a little more on other things that are attached to clothing.